It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well today. It is so warm. It's 40 degrees. 40 degrees outside.
You're sloppy out there. Icy and sloppy.
Well, earlier this morning, it was not that. It was warm, and that was pleasant. It was beginning to show that, but you're right. You may be looking into the near future, and that's what we're going to have, especially a little bit today and also tomorrow. There should be rain. That will happen. So fortunately, we're inside, and we can reflect upon the world as it's passed through this week, and then maybe take a look at a little bit in the future what's coming up. The number of meetings that happened since we last spoke. We had some special meetings. We had a special meeting over the Palmer Depot with a guy who came from Toronto, Canada, all the way to Anchorage and out here to Palmer, Gil Penalosa. Yeah. That was well attended. Maybe we'll just touch briefly on that since we haven't talked about it, because there were so many people from all of those typical venues where we see the mayor of the borough, the mayor of the city of Palmer, and all those other folks. How about a quick summary?
Yeah, so just a disclaimer, I helped put that event together. It was an ARP Alaska Livable Communities, or Healthy Communities, we called it out here, event. And it was really intended to do have a community conversation on how Matthew, a good place to live could be a great place to live and be more livable for all ages. And Gil Penalosa is with an organization out of Toronto, Canada, called 880 Cities, which is the acronym sort of means, you know, inclusion of looking at your community through the eyes of an 8-year-old and an 80-year-old, with the feeling that if it's safe and provides good livable infrastructure and attractions and safety and a robust community that appeals to both those ages, that you have a pretty darn good community. So the borough, it was a public invitation. There was a invitation. We wanted to get some input from some community leaders from different sectors. The mayor of the borough was on a panel that after Mr. Penalosa's talk, and I should probably say that it is online still on Radio Free Palmer. I thank you, Mike, for both streaming that and also the audio and also the video on that, so people can catch that here. And so the mayor was on it, and somebody from a planner from a transportation background, Murph O'Brien, who's been around Palmer for a long time and done a lot of projects around town, and Amy Spargo, who was representing education, and Bonnie Quill from tourism, and I'm going to miss some, but there was about six people. Patty Cohen from real estate. And what was, I thought Gil's talk was really interesting. I had heard it a couple of times because he appeared in Anchorage a few times before he came to the Valley. But what really struck me was the conversation that he had with our leaders. And they were posed with a question ahead of time if they could do five things in their sector that would make it, or do some things in their sector that would make it more livable, basically, not really looking so much at money and people, but what is on their wish list. And I thought their remarks were just really, really important. The three of them right away, first three that spoke, talked about education, you know, and how important education was to our community. And that, you know, I've always felt that way, and we've passed school bonds, and there's a lot of support for education, as many as there are some critics, but we have a pretty darn good education system for a borough our size. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But just talking about the little projects that we could do that could make, you know, our cities more livable, and not big mega projects. I think people are a little weary of those, and the state is still in a recession, and the cities are being asked to pick up more of the tab for what they do. But just, you know, snow removal bubbles up to me, because we can talk about that. That came up at the Palmer meeting that you went to, Mike.
Right.
of our sidewalks and being more intentional on our playgrounds and where we put them in benches for people to rest. And somebody pointed out after a changing table at the depot would be good. That's a very big community center that lots of ages go. So just a lot of small projects. And I think people are energized. It was a really big crowd. There were people there that I saw a lot of nods in the audience saying, yeah, we can do that. So I think it was a really kind of a nice community healing event almost, saying, yeah, we can work together, even though there are certain people in the center that are trying to divide us and we may not agree in everything. We can work together to make our communities more livable. So that's kind of my synopsis.
Yeah, very, very interesting suggestion. I think the takeaway that I had first, the hit was, wow, these are people that very often are, they talk to one another and so on. But this is an amazing grouping of people across all of the lines. Yeah, it was a wonderful audience. And
yeah.
I think that's, and it wasn't a government-sponsored thing.
And it wasn't just Palmer. There were a lot of Wasilla people there,
sure,
too.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. And that reminder that as individuals, we don't have to wait for a grant to come through, et cetera, to do something. So I think doing something is probably the message I took away to say, well, look around. You can talk about all the this and that, but what is there one thing you and a few other people could do?
I think it was interesting to me bringing Gil Hill, not only is he a global renowned speaker across so many different sectors and has worked with over 300 communities. He lives in Toronto. He originates out of Colombia, but has lived in Toronto for 20 years. So he lives in a winter city. And I think we sometimes, one of the barriers we put up to our own success is we say, oh, well, we can't do that because we have too bad a winter. And I think Gil kind of blew that away, saying, yeah, well, we have some bad days of winter, but are we planning our cities around a few bad days? Are we planning it for some really amazing days that we have? And I think that having those comparisons and seeing, even if you're not the same city as Copenhagen or you're not the same city as Toronto or Austin, you can scale those and we can be just as good as they can be if the community wants us to be, age friendly and work the program.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Well, let's switch to the other events that have happened. And we know that both the Assembly and the School Board and also the Palmer City Council have met, among other organizations. Did you have a chance to look at any of those? I know you've been busy with other things.
I listened to both of them, actually. I listened to the Assembly meeting a few days ago, so I've slept since then.
Good.
Nothing, I don't think there's any huge things pending over them. They did revisit the racetrack ordinance again and make a few tweaks to it, and having to do with hours and that sort of thing. And I have a feeling that's going to come back even again for, these are big, these ordinances or these changes in codes oftentimes take a couple of runs at them. They took a run at the timber transport thing that they'd kicked down the road a few times, and they I think that one may come back again. There was some talk about what monies they had received for the earthquake and what had been done. Jules Biltiford from the Public Works Department gave a pretty good report on what they had, most of it had to do with work that they had done in the schools. Of course, we all know they've had to move an amazing amount of portables over to the Houston High area since the middle school is closed there, and just ongoing things that are being done and assessments, Mike, because not everything is done yet. They're not really quite sure what's going to happen. Mr. Sykes asked them point blank if they thought that the Houston Middle School was going to be a total loss, and they said no, they didn't know yet. They've actually hired their own architect firm to go in and do an assessment, who I'm sure has an engineer who's working with them. So they have something to go. The insurance company, those insurance negotiations, you kind of need both eyes on them. So that's still out there, and you'll be hearing about that for a while, no doubt, as they wrap that up. So nothing sticks out to me. They had a, I haven't gotten the information, but I've requested it on their work session that happened last Saturday.
Right, with the planning, session. Right. What? Yeah.
We'll see if we can have that for next time, because that's kind of the, sets the tone for the year, so to speak. And we'll try to catch up with that. There was an air quality meeting in the Butte, informational only, no action. I heard there were about 35 people there, just kind of informational. So that's kind of on the borough side of things. Next, we'll go ahead and let's talk about the Palmer City Council, because you went to that and I listened to that yesterday. And that was pretty interesting.
Well, it was short to start with. They started and finished within less than an hour. And they had a few good words to say about the Gil Penalosa event over at the Palmer Depot that kicked things off. And they also have their own version of an award, a golden award for people who have done good things. And they were working on figuring out how to do it. And once again, it came across to me that there aren't a lot of these programs that have established ways of processing. So they had four people that had come up, and the real question that the number of...
We're nominated,
right. And there were a couple of people that came up and said, well, the questions came up from council members that said, well, what about this? What if a name comes up, do we also want to have a kind of description of the person's accomplishments or reasons why we're doing this? Yeah.
That was an interesting conversation, and when you look back at that, I think it's been in effect. Councilman Best was sort of the genesis of this program, and I think there has been 4 years of it now, and 1 year they only had one person, and 1 year I think they had a couple people, and now this year they've had four, and it's always a balancing act. Is it a popularity contest, or is there really, like you say, Mike, some background that they can judge to say this person is great, has really contributed, but maybe this person has contributed a little more. And so I think you're right. They need to refine the program a little bit to make it, you know, sometimes when you say, oh, there's four people this year, you kind of dilute the reasoning for the program. I don't know. We'll see. But it was interesting. It was an interesting conversation. And at the end of the day, they are going to have four people that are going to get the award, so to speak. And I'm not sure what the logistics are about doing that actual award. They didn't talk about that much.
Well, I thought one of the more interesting discussions began with what seemed to be an easy thing, and it had to do with relief from paying a tax.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
And I thought that it was talking about the city manager, who in code has some ability to make a decision not to, in certain circumstances, have a person have to pay their tax to the city. And online, the lawyer who works for the firm that the city is contracted with said, wait a moment, let's look at this carefully, because it turns out that from her reading of the ordinances, there were some taxes they could do, but the others became problematic if he were to provide a relief. She very nicely stated her case. They went on. She consulted with another attorney. She came back and said, well, you know, let's talk tomorrow about this, because there are implications when you do things that you want to make sure that you're aware of. And
right.
And I, you know, the specifics will come out again in the next meeting.
Yeah.
But what I was very much impressed with is that she was able to, she was obviously following things at a detailed level, And she was not there. She was on the phone. And she was able to catch that and provide advice so that it wasn't something that they took action with and maybe had to walk on back later. What was your impression?
Yeah, well, the two things that came up to me, that just a little background, this was sort of an effort to reach out and help give assistance to the federal workers that have not had a paycheck now due to the partial government shutdown for a while. And everybody knows there is a lot of federal workers, federal and state workers in the Valley. And so they wanted to be able to, it sounded to me, say, don't worry about your water and sewage bill or the fees and tax penalties that might accumulate until you get back on your feet, which, you know, seems like a good thing. And I think there was a lot of support on the council to do it. But I've been through these things in code before with the borough, and there's a lot of technicalities, basically with if they're a homeroom, we're a home-ruled city here in Palmer, but that what they're allowed to do is kind of dictated in the way that what they are, and also is it a tax or is it a fee? And does the manager actually have the ability to waive a tax that the voters normally, you know, vote on the level of taxation, and whether he can waive a fee? I think they have more latitude in that. So I think, you know, end of the day, it may be a wash and come out. But I'm like you, Mike. I'm really glad that the attorney, who wasn't the normal attorney, it was someone filling in, but she was quite handled it quite well. And it is, you know, she's wanting to give some caution and say, I'm not saying we can't do it, but I'd like some more time to study it because what we let's go against our own code. And I think that was really good advice.
And in that short meeting, they also had a, kind of an interesting result of something that had caused great concern and had implications for taxes. And that had to do with the fair, the Alaska State Fair, mm-hmm. being able to retain the ability to sell alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, the director of the State Fair, the ED, came in and thanked the city for weighing in with the ABC about a proposal, that as I remember it, to not allow alcohol sales in certain ways at the fair. And I think the position taken was that, well, this was an amount of money that was going to flow in taxes to the city. The real thing was that it was one of those major factors that improved in attendance at the fair. What's your read?
Well, I haven't followed this as closely as I know. I've gotten a lot of questions about this, and I used to own a liquor license, and I know a little bit about liquor licenses. But I think the concern on the part of the state, it sounds like, is it's an event. It's not a full, there's several different types of liquor license within the state, and they're all within state code. And it sounds like what the fair has been able to operate on is an event license, which is normally the intent is for one event and in one venue spot. And they've been able to use, and it's a lesser amount of money that you pay for that. And it sounds like the state might be looking to increase their revenues by requiring more licensing to be able to do that. So I'm sort of guardedly optimistic on this one, Mike, that at the end of the day, the fair will gain its ability to sell liquor, but I'm not sure it won't come with increased fees to do so. What I haven't heard about is, and I've not been for a long time, but the Tanana State Fair is going on in Fairbanks, and I think Kenai even has some type of a fair. So what does this have an effect? You know, close to home is important to us, but does this have an effect on other multi-day, multi-venue events? And I've not been to those. I can only speak to the Anchorage or the Alaska State Fair here in Palmer, which I think is operated really well as far as it goes for liquor. They have a good system for checking people that are very good about checking people's ID and that sort of thing. And not to say things don't happen, but by and large, even the liquor licenses in Palmer, even there are multiple ones, and at the fair are done pretty good for that business, which is a really rough business to be in, I will say. So I don't know. I think it will wash out, but I think that the city council being proactive in their support and the leverage that they may have on the legislation with key legislators will be helpful to the fair, or we hope so.
Sure. Thank you. It sounds as if what we probably need to do is have a conversation with representatives from the fair.
That'd be
to
great.
Get their perspective and make that
he
happen.
He was there, as
yeah.
a matter of fact.
Right.
So, yeah. But, Mike, I would like to talk about the beginning of the meeting manager's report, who did indicate that he had been interviewed by an Anchorage Public Media on a show called Insights that our friend Lori Townsend does in Anchorage. She interviewed Gil Penalosa as part of their livability series.
Right.
And she had a call to Nate Wallace about the city of Palmer because she, of course, knew that Nate was coming or that Gil was coming out here and they'd been in town. And he gave quite a good interview, I thought. It was over the phone. And he made suggestion of that when he talked at the city council. But what came from that was snow removal, a lot of talk about snow removal.
Oh, right, yes.
Right. And he brought forth to the council some research that he had done on a piece of equipment like one that Anchorage has already to specifically remove snow from sidewalks. And was saying that he had researched it because I think that the manager does a good job researching projects and trying to he's very good about conservatively spending the city of Palmer money, it would seem. And he had researched this pretty well and said, this is a piece of equipment I think would work for us. This is the cost. It was seemed very reasonable to me for what you need for that sort of thing, $27,000. I know what I paid for a snowplow just personally. It's pretty expensive with the truck. So it seemed to me to be a reasonable part. He had researched it really well and was asking to see if he could move forward on that. He did seem to admit that the sidewalks had been especially rough. He also said that, you know, it is a challenge, and I think we do know that with this freeze-thaw that we're seeing right now, but this piece of equipment would be able to deal with some salting of the sidewalks and clearing of, not only just clearing of the snow. And it sounds like I love that there's jumping on that right away and
right,
responding
right.
to the voices of the community that I think they've heard all along. There's been concerns for the last few years, but not just that, but, you know, large voices together in a room always help too. So I was kudos to the manager for bringing that to him. And it sounded like he got good support from the council. They wanted him to bring it back in the form of a request because it is expenditures and they want to formalize it, but it sounded like they were in favor of it. So
it did do that.
Good.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Good.
So bravo.
So let's just look a little bit to the future and see if there is a future in terms of the Alaska State Legislature. The House, as best we know at this point, is still struggling to organize so that it can conduct business. In the meantime, the Senate. The Alaska State Senate is rolling along, having meetings, et cetera, et cetera. The governor's making a variety of proposals, getting bills ready to be presented. But until the House is in action, that's only part of the story.
Yeah.
It does not see. I've yet to see references that explain how this is going to happen. There seems to be genial conversations. People are not yelling at one another, at least in public, and there's kind of a stalemate.
Yeah, that's moving pretty slow. That's going to be interesting. They can't really do any too much business yet until, again, you know, have hearings and that sort of thing until they've decided and they are at a deadlock who's going to lead their group. You know, I kind of think at some point there'll be a log jam break here. Whether they'll be able to finish all their work is going to be interesting. I would think that a lot of them are listening in to the hearings that are taking place in the Senate right now because a lot of it is redundancy. I mean, they go and speak on both sides, but they don't get to ask questions on when they're listening to the Senate, do their interviews of the budget director and that sort of thing. So that's going to be something to watch for sure, Mike.
Because it's significant.
I wouldn't take any bets on this one.
Yeah, it's significant who's in charge of the variety of subcommittees that and committees, because that guides the flow of the House's opinion about these bills. And right now, it looks like there's no guidance. There is no House opinion. There's just a variety of people waiting to get down to the nitty-gritty.
They can't really do much business at all, because they can't even seat their committee chairs or that sort of stuff.
And, of course, in addition to that, similar in some respects to what's happening at the federal government level, where people are not working, they've been furloughed. All of the staff can't really be up to speed doing the kind of work that's necessary to provide representatives with the information they need, the research they need when something being proposed. This puts the House, my observation would be, in a down position relative to the Senate, which is going full force, has all the time to do what they do, and then they hand something, say, we've looked this over thoroughly. Are you ready to do your part? Well, they're presently not ready to do their part.
Yeah.
Okay.
One last thing, Mike, just before we wrap up here, there is an important meeting. Well, next week is going to be busy. Our little break is over, Mike. There'll be a assembly meeting on Tuesday, I believe.
Right.
Don't know that they've got a special meeting before that one. They've talked about that, but I'd have to check the schedule on that. But we'll be at that one. And then the next day, there's actually not only a school board meeting, but there's an early meeting to take on the they have a school board vacancy.
Right.
Out in the Big Lake area.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Right. And they have five candidates vying for that seat.
Very interesting.
And so they'll be taking that on at 5 o'clock, and then followed up by their school board member. And if people are interested in those candidates, they are on the borough website. I'm sorry, on the school district website, under the boarddocs.com. Follow it through there, and it's good to get to know who those candidates are, to get a little bit of an insight is to them. And then they'll be, of course, doing the interviews and their selection and that sort of thing. We've been through this a few times, Mike.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for calling in today. We covered a lot of ground, and we'll be talking again next week.
All right. Have a great day.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.